Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
And we've been just doing some election review and
wacky on elections.
Policy stuff in terms of elections and changes that needed.
So the big thing we were just talking about was the 3rd Congressional District.
Right.
And we'll know by September 17th, next Monday, who the actual winner is.
Will it be that soon?
Well, the thing is that when you do a recount, in this case here, it's not as complicated as it would be for a Cambridge municipal election. Pretty much you just have to validate the votes.
Oh, because they're not transferring,
and then you just take the totals and add them up.
Right, because
the final results are as...
But they do have to look at some of the ones that they had circled a name instead of, because they counted them as blank. He wants to look at the blanks.
That's right.
What was the voter's intent?
There will be additional ballots thrown in, but the thing is that if the ballots with errors were voted more or less in the same proportions that the regular election were, which is what you might originally expect, then it shouldn't change the outcome.
No.
Right? It might just, everybody would go up a little bit, but,
but
it won't change much. But, you know, and his question is 122 or whatever was number of ballots.
122.
Is that a big margin to overcome when you're talking about a total of 18,000 votes? It's actually pretty small.
Wait, 18,000 for both of them or for each?
The Trahan over Dan Coe, it was 18,500.
Right, but I'm saying they each got 8, so it's out of...
They each got over 18,000, and it's a 100-vote margin between them. So that's actually within... It's 0.1% difference.
There's a chance.
There is a possibility.
Yeah.
But
I do hope she pulls it off. I'd like to see a woman kept in that seat.
I think that's probably what will happen
He's good, but he's...
Right, but the thing is, and we should talk about that, not to belabor the issue too much, but the thing is that already people who are advocates for alternate voting systems and ranked choice balloting are using this for good reason.
Yes, excellent.
As now a school books example
of why
ranked choice voting would make a lot of sense.
Yep.
For the longest time, I've actually said that for vacancy fills, that we should do it by a single election with transferable ballots.
Yeah.
You know, or else just a gubernatorial appointment. I'd be happy with that, for God's sake.
Well, that's what they do in a lot of places.
In some places, But if you're going to have an election, have a real election, you know, make it real do it right. You know, California, they did a system where, across the state, where you could have a bunch of the candidates in an open primary regardless
of
party,
a party.
So you could have two Democrats going against each other. Mm-hmm. In the November election. You could have had two Republicans.
It makes sense to me. First of all, it would save a lot of procedures.
Well, I think ranked choice ballots would be preferable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A top two runoff is not preferable, but it's better, right? Because with top two, you could still have a person who in a ranked choice system might actually have won, might not finish in the top two, but would have been the consensus candidate of many. So that's not usually what happens, but it can happen. So there is no perfect voting system, but the thing is, plurality elections and winner-take-all elections are ridiculous for when you have a lot of candidates.
And the Electoral College, they have to figure that one out.
Yeah, but the thing is, there's another thing. Where is the incentive?
Well, they should make fraction. Well, because in some states, they actually divide those electoral
votes. Right, but the thing is right now, the...
Is it Colorado?
The
Nevada?
Republicans seem to be getting the advantage in the system as it is.
Well...
So are you going to get those red states? Because you remember it's 3/4 of the states have to say yay to a constitutional amendment.
One of those red states, though, does have that, I thought. Well, maybe not.
Yeah,
don't quote me. But the point is, we have to change it. It doesn't work.
I really think we should change it.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
But, trying to find the political path to the solution isn't always such an easy thing.
Okay.
All right, so anyway...
So the big race
locally, that was all over the news.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't all of Cambridge. It was my area of Cambridge, and it was parts of North Cambridge.
Right, I'm Catherine Park.
And those are the only two, right?
Right.
So what district is that?
It's 5 and 7, so I'm 5.
It's 5, the 5th district. Okay.
Yeah. And there was after the renumbering, because the Capuana was elected originally as part of the East
8, I know. And then it is now the most... But what I was confused by, and I guess I've been corrected, is that when that was redrawn, it was Democrats that did it to make it more diverse. Am I wrong about that? It wasn't Republicans. We've never had Republicans here to do that.
No.
So
it was done, and actually part of that, there was some, right, so they wanted to create
something
in the spirit of the Voting Rights Act to have at least one.
Right.
majority, minority.
And that's what the seventh is.
That's what it was, right?
Yeah.
Now, oftentimes you draw districts if you have an incumbent, you redraw it to make the incumbent more safe, right?
Right.
So this would be an exception.
Right. Right. And it's the most. It's the only one in the state.
Right.
Like that.
Right. Now, I don't know whether had they not created a majority-minority district, whether there would have been a court challenge. I somehow doubt that, but
you know, how long has it been the seventh?
Well, the census would have been, you know, it's every 10 years.
Oh, okay, so it was 2010?
Is that because the census takes place in 2010. It takes a while to gather up the stats and verify everything. So typically, the new redistricting would go into effect. In the past, it used to be like for 2000 would have been 2003.
So you think was 2013 or 2012?
It's possible they could have enacted it in time.
Because he came in 98, right? So he'd already been serving probably about 10 years or so. I don't know, right.
Right. So Mike Capuano was in his seat for 20 years.
Total, right.
Right, so 10 terms. And for the most part, I believe he...
He's never been...
He either had no challengers or... just nonsense challengers.
Right. Yeah, right. I don't remember any challengers.
Right. So this is the time it was the first serious challenger, and it was more than just a serious challenger.
Yeah.
It was a competent challenger who already had a pretty solid political base.
At large.
There were racial and gender aspects to play into the politics of this, to be sure.
Right.
Also, young versus old, and...
She's not a 28-year-old. She is 44. Right.
That's right.
But it was more a non-baby boomer is really more the way they want to put it. Yeah.
And I suspect that voter turnout may have played a bit into this. And let's look at that back again. Let's look at 2014 as well as 2015.
Is that below here?
Yeah, it's below. Yeah. So the thing is that if you look at the last comparable election, at least where I look at it, would be 4 years ago. So it was not a presidential primary. Yeah, so not a presidential primary, just a state primary. So all the same seats would have been up here, except for Middlesex County Clerk of Courts, because that's every 6 years. But that's sort of it's immaterial in this discussion.
Right, so how do we look at this? Because it's kind of confusing.
Okay, so what we have here is in the September 2014 state primary, which would be comparable to the September 2018. State primary, what you see is roughly, there's some changes, like in Ward 1, Precinct 1, which is the top line, you can see there were 1,981 registered voters in 2014, and there was a good jump of about 450 more registered voters in Ward 1-1. Now, that's probably because of the new housing down in North Point or whatever, but that's kind of exceptional. If you actually look from, Ward 1, Precinct 1, Ward Precinct 1, Precinct 2, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, what you'll see is the registered voters in 1994, right? Like, for example, let's look at Ward 3, Precinct 2.
Here?
There were 1,239.
Yeah.
Then there were 1,264, right? Okay,
a few more. 2018.
Right. So, so a few more registered voters, right? For the most part, the number of registered voters is relatively constant.
But the ballots cast is very different.
Well, that's the thing,
right?
So we'll look at the citywide total in a minute, but if you look right across the board, you're going from Ward 1.
It's like double.
Right. It's, it's approximately double.
In some,
all the
in
way
some it's four times.
Board.
I mean, look at Ward 2, too.
Well, it's also a real small one.
Oh,
it's
kind of anomalous. All right. What's the highest turnout?
The highest turnouts are usually in Ward 9 and Ward 11. So let's scroll down there a little bit here, which will actually get us down to the citywide total as well.
All right, so 9.
So in many of these precincts, 40%. The turnout is about double. So I'm looking at 14 to 27.
Yeah, but it was 35, though.
18 to 36.
That's pretty high here.
19 to 38. Yeah. Your precinct was what, 5-3?
5-3.
So you went from 19.6 to 39.1.
Oh, that's big. Yeah.
But it's almost exactly double.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, if you look at some of the other precincts, which are the ones that are typically high turnout precincts,
like
all of Ward 9, and some of the...
Is that West Cambridge? What's Ward 9?
West Cambridge,
okay.
Okay, so even 4 years ago, you had 35% turnout, 28%.
Yeah, that's pretty high in 9-1,
And then down in 11-2 and 11-3, it's 27 and 27.
Oh, that really jumped. Look at this one. Yeah.
Okay, but the thing is, now if you look at that, but the thing is that in the ones that had high turnout originally, they didn't double, but they went up. They all went up.
Well, this one, though, is 26 to 46. That's,
right. So it's,
oh, it's not quite, it's not double, but it's
right.
a lot.
But you see other ones, yeah. like going from 28 to 34. It's a 6% more, right?
But 46% is pretty high.
35 to 40% yeah. in Iowa, yeah. right? So what happened here is that in wards and precincts outside of the ones where you usually have a lot of the mm-hmm. turnout, there were a lot more people just said, who were normally very apathetic, just said, hey, I'm voting this time.
Well, here are the totals. You can see it here.
Right. Yeah. So the thing is, citywide, it's about double.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
you can see there's a few more registered voters citywide, but the...
12,843
12, yep. people voted to 22,163.
Yep. A lot more excitement.
In a comparable mm-hmm. election. So about 19.7% jumping up to
33%. Well, like you said, in the 14, it was it the governor? One? Was that
yeah,
the
there was a, that would have been a governor's
but
race
that was
as
a
well.
Primary. But are these primary totals? These are primaries.
This, would it be in the primary? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there was
so the primary.
Yeah.
So the, so
it was basically when, just Coakley against I don't know who.
Baker.
Running.
Well, Baker
no, no,
won
prime, it was a primary.
And I forget,
right.
You know, I forget what was happening.
Sure. Sure. Sure.
Democratic
sure.
side yeah. of the primary at the time, but the thing is that they weren't bringing people out like this one did.
Right.
And I'm going to guess and say that it was probably the Capuano Presley one that was really drawing attention here.
Absolutely.
I'd have to look across the state to see how the
yeah, be curious. Do you know what the total turnout was?
I don't know what
the state?
What the increase in turnout was statewide. In Cambridge, it was really like doubled.
Right, but I'm curious if it was that high
across
the
state. I don't think it would have been doubled, but
or I'd be curious about what Boston was.
Yeah, I think across the state, just the races just were not as interesting, right?
Does the Secretary of State's page have those numbers? Is that where you would find that?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Now, the thing is, I usually like to wait before posting info. This I got, I went ran over
well, this
there
week, also
last
specific
night.
To us, too.
Yeah, I think you sent me an email, and I went and ran
yeah,
over
right.
like, in
I
the
said,
rain.
What is the percentage?
Right, so I went running over the Election Commission like 7:30 last night and grabbed the sheets. And
it's running. Over. Isn't it two houses away?
It's not that far. Yeah. But I needed an umbrella. Right. But anyway, and then they actually posted a lot of the information on the Election Commission website if you know where to look.
Oh, okay.
So,
All right.
So anyway, so that was interesting, you know. And I guess the big attraction for November is just going to be the governor's race, really. Everything. I mean, some
yeah.
people think there's Elizabeth Warren versus
right.
the who's
well,
the
this Jeff Deal. This Jeff Deal, which
yeah.
is drawing interest.
I think there'll be a lot of rhetoric, but honestly, I think it's just going to be used by Elizabeth Warren to basically polish
who's
her
who's the last
tools.
Republican senator? Was it Ed Brooke?
Ed Brooke, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll see how that shakes out. A lot of my friends love Jay Gonzalez, but honestly, I think he needs a little more razzmatazz. If you want to be
and,
a successful
well, also,
candidate.
You know, they have to stop blaming everything on the governor when you've had a Democratic legislature forever.
Well, they're either blaming it on the governor
yeah.
or they're blaming it on Trump. So, you know, one or the other, right?
Well,
maybe I'm just sort of naive about this, but to me, if you want to be a candidate running for anything, tell me what you're going to do. Don't tell me what the other guy didn't do. You
mm-hmm.
know, focus on the positive. Don't,
well,
don't
he,
just
he does. I've
trash
heard
the other
him speak,
guys.
Yeah. Be interesting. I'm looking forward to the debates. Those are always
right.
telling.
Yeah. You know, one interesting thing is, so I've been seeing a lot of the talk about the T, you know, the MBTA.
Oh, yeah, and it's all
you know,
his fault.
Charlie
yeah.
Baker, you know, he said it, he's going to take charge, and now look at it's falling
yeah.
apart, et cetera, et cetera,
yeah.
et cetera. Guess what, folks?
What?
Nobody in Western Mass cares about the T. The truth is that, so, yeah, so Jay Gonzalez wins the place that's served by the T. But everybody else says, oh, you want to raise my taxes a ton? So you can support Boston's transportation.
There's no trains that go out all the way
well,
to Western Mass? I mean,
there's
yeah,
not they're... a lot of political desire to basically jack up your taxes to support Boston's transportation. That's always been the problem.
Well, also
fact,
that, fact,
the
toll, the pike and all
yeah,
that. Yeah,
if you look at it, the so-called millionaire's tax, which got
oh, yeah,
pushed
he's against
off the
that.
Ballot.
Yeah.
Right, because it was a violation because it was like multiple things you're trying to do at once, which is a violation. But anyway, had that gone on the ballot, basically the idea was we're going to increase, do this big surtax. And the idea was, and it would be dedicated toward transportation, meaning the T, but also other things. So that it was basically designed so it would get some support from other parts of the state, not just. Mm. And in fact, whenever they try and do a legislative intervention to do something about the T, it always turns into a battle where people from the other part of the state say, well, okay, but what's in it for us?
Well, that's what happened with rent control. It became a statewide initiative.
Yeah, I mean, that was
a lot
actually,
of people that didn't
that was
have
a
stake in the game said.
That was a very a clever legal maneuver.
Yep, right.
To realize that, in fact,
let's get it out of Cambridge.
You could turn it into a statewide issue, and there was a couple of precedents. Mm-hmm. Let's not get into it, but there were some legal precedents that basically said that the question is something that involving like rent control, which was only valid in
Cambridge,
three places.
Oh, was it other than Cambridge?
Well, there were trailer parks, Cambridge. I think there was a vestige of it still in Brookline.
And, maybe vacancy decontrol or something like
but
that.
But the thing is that there was still rent control, and I think in some of Boston.
Huh.
Okay, so only three. So you figure, okay, there's 300 some odd cities and towns across the state. Only three have this, so why are the people in all these other 300
get to vote on it?
Voting on this? Well, because of a legal technicality.
Which was?
When does something qualify as a legitimate statewide issue? And the precedent was really based on a rather curious thing about could two towns be considered statewide?
Oh.
Well, for example, if you're building a bridge or a tunnel between two cities, mm-hmm. is that a statewide issue? Nope. It's just between the two towns.
Yeah.
But three, you can't build a bridge or a tunnel between three towns.
That's interesting. So that's really what
then
it
that
was?
Became a statewide. So, so there's actually a decision dating back to about 1972, actually relating to Cambridge's proportional representation system, where, in fact, that was one of the precedents that was used to say that because there was not more than just two, it was a legitimate home rule. So that's why we were allowed to keep our planning charter.
Well, it never would have gone to a statewide vote if Cambridge had actually tried to do something about it to help small property owners.
I knew that at the time.
Went along figuring they'd always have the vote, they'd always have the tenants' vote. Yeah.
And I think a lot of other people who didn't acknowledge that at the time retroactively now realize, I guess we
they could have done some incremental changes.
They could have.
It was not fair.
But the thing is the rhetoric at the time was we shouldn't be weakening it, we should be strengthening it. So they took
now
it
you
of
hear,
a more
let's
militant
bring it back,
view.
Which is not really.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
But 1994 was also 24 years ago. Mm. So would there be some sentiment within the state to enact this? I think the answer is no, and I think it's probably emphatically no, but for a number of reasons. And it's not just because, it's all settled, because it's not all settled, but you can change things. But I think that there would be a tremendous amount of opposition would rise up very rapidly if
there's
to enact that. Some of the revolutionaries are sort of trying to push it anyway, but
the 6 months waiting before you sell something, that was sort of trying
to get the, so they try to do a sort of incrementally try and nibble their way toward the kind of control that they ultimately want.
I think we should look at all ways that maybe can help people get things reasonably, but you can't basically take away certain rights.
I mean, I think it's kind of valid. So let's see. So is there any other election-related things?
There's a lot of meetings tomorrow. I know that.
Yeah, actually, it's just really wild. The city council actually comes back for the fall.
Not till the 17th.
Which is next Monday.
Yeah.
So this Thursday night, I'll be able to sort of look at the agenda. And guess is that, in the interim from the summer meeting till now, a lot of the councilors will have sort of drafted.
A lot of time, because that was July 30th. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It's like 6 weeks.
And though this may seem premature, the truth is that if you're an elected official in September of an even year, you're starting to think we're getting toward the end of the even year and the beginning of an odd year, which is a municipal election system.
Oh, please.
Listen, I'm quoting other city councilors who've said this to me over the years.
Yeah.
As you get closer to the end of the year, they start thinking ahead a lot more. And what that means, and I'm not trying to be cynical here.
Oh, please do.
Well, what it means is that,
we're not on?
No, we're just on. It's just that the light just seems a little dim here.
I'm sure they can hear you.
All right, yeah, okay. But anyway, as you start getting toward the end of the year, what will happen is, or right around this season here, is that it's in your best interest as an elected official to start pushing things out there that you can sort of hang your hat on as part of your
I thought they've been doing
re-election.
That all along. Jeez.
I think so.
Yeah, the climate initiative, the trees, concerned they're not hearing you?
I wasn't so sure. Yeah, this is...
You talk loud, all right.
I'll yell and scream, right?
All right.
So the thing is that I imagine when I look at the agenda, there'll be probably 40 city council orders, you know, some of which will have to do with trees, because that seems to be sort of something that people are kind of organizing around, for better or worse. You know, but there'll be other things, you know.
But there have been meetings, though. It's not like nothing. I mean, there's three meetings tomorrow.
Right,
like,
right. Now, the Envision Cambridge process
is... And that's tomorrow
night?
One of the advisory committee meetings.
Right,
tomorrow.
So I'm on that Envision Cambridge advisory committee. So
which
we have a meeting
at
the Senior Center.
At 6, I think.
At 6. It was originally going to be last Thursday, which is good because I had to teach a lecture, so I'd have to leave early, so this is better for me. But the thing is, that's at 6, and at 6:30,
there's something else.
A neighborhood long-term planning committee meeting.
Back, but the city council has meetings all afternoon.
Right.
But the only one televised is at 1 o'clock. I'm going to watch that at home.
So is that the one about the scooters?
Yes, that's televised.
All right, so that's Jan Denver's committee.
Yeah.
So she wanted that one recorded.
And then there's the retail.
Right, so the retail strategy and the vacant storefronts is at 4.
4 to 6, and then 6:30 is another one?
That's the neighborhood long-term planning,
to
where
discuss,
it's about Inman Square redesign.
But and, I thought that's settled. No?
Well, what happened is the city council passed a home rule petition. That,
oh, right, that got,
And the legislature said, okay. Right? You can do what you want to do.
Yeah.
But now there's challenges. There's some people in the area who says, well, here's an alternative plan. And and I don't know whether that's going to go anywhere. But
I thought they presented that alternative plan at the last time this was all discussed.
Right. But it was also promised that, in fact, nothing was settled then. All we wanted to do was get authorization from the state, and then we will have the
rest
of the discussion.
So now, so this is the rest of the discussion? Okay.
Well, at least part of it. But,
I might.
But there's one interesting point to be made, which is this. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, part of the Inman Square redesign involves moving the bicycle traffic up onto the sidewalk.
Right.
Right? They want it, you know, above grade on the sidewalk, right?
Okay.
So some people are saying, okay, now part of the swap here for so-called Vellucci Park was moving parkland, you know, designated park space on one place over across the street to another space, so that it's an even swap, right? But included in that so-called park space is the space, the area where the bike path is, which is a transportation. So arguably that's a part of the road.
Okay.
So is the bike path part of the road?
Or is it part
of the curb?
Yeah.
Or
is it part of the park?
So is that a legitimate part of a swapped open space?
Is that what's going to be discussed?
I don't know if it is, but I know that that's one of the points that people were making, is that in fact you said this was going to be even Steven, but it's not.
Hmm.
Right? I mean, the old park didn't have a bike path running through it.
I wish these were all televised. It would be better.
Yeah.
But they're not.
So. Right. So,
So that's going on, and then there's the Envision, which is across the street.
Right. So that's
from
at 6 o'clock.
To, okay.
Now, so I'm going to have to do that. And then the following night, there's a
housing?
There's
Envision?
There's the housing working group, and I'm
on
that too.
Where is that going to be held?
That is, I believe, over at the City Hall Annex.
Okay. You have all of this on your
civic
calendar.
Yeah, it's all on the site.
Okay.
But anyway, it's hectic. I think the big topic in Envision right now is actually the one which is probably a flashpoint for a lot of people in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Namely, what they were calling development scenarios. So
we
had a lot of controversy over the affordable housing overlay, and I'm not quite sure where that's going to go. And the city council is independently pushing it as well, you know, even though it does involve things like quadrupling the allowable density for 100% affordable housing unit projects, which is not exactly
and maybe
a
taking
tiny
down
increase,
some trees
a lot perhaps. So the thing is that so there's that. But there's also the development scenario. So in other words, it was a lot of this talk about the corridors and the squares. And in some of the scenarios, like they showed images, it got everybody a little worked up, you know, like 12-story buildings in the heart of Porter Square, or 19-story, I forget it was 12 or 13 or 19 stories, in the heart of Harvard Square. And my experience over the years has been that, you know, even with Mass and Main, which is now up to 10 stories of steel across the street from us, if 5 years ago you said, hey, we want to build a building that's 19 stories, and even in Central Square, people would go crazy and say no.
Yeah.
5 stories, 6 stories maximum, and that would be the sentiment. Well, okay, Mass and Main is being built, and it'll be about 19 stories. It was the housing part of that that kind of got it pushed through.
Yeah.
So now what happens if in Harvard Square, in Porter Square, somebody says, well, we think it'd be a great idea if you build a 19-story building.
Hmm.
And you know, because we need the, you know, the density, and we need the housing and the affordable housing.
This is all in the context of the affordable housing overlay.
No, actually, this is sort of independent, just in terms of the overall reset.
Oh, in terms of what
allowable densities and such like that.
Yeah, okay.
So my prediction is that there's going to be a lot of pushback.
Oh yeah.
And it will not be uniform across the city. Mm-mm. You know, there'll be people up in Porter Square will be very irate, and there'll be some of the ABC people will come out and say, no, build more. Mm-hmm. In Harvard Square, people are going to be triply irate. Mm. In Central Square, maybe people would be a little more accommodating.
Well, where else are they going to build in Central Square?
I don't know, but the thing is, you could just change the zoning to allow 19-story buildings everywhere. I don't think that's going to happen, but you know.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
But the thing is, you don't get as much pushback from a place like Central Square as you would from Harvard Square or Porter Square. So, you know, you run the risk of saying, okay, we had this big exercise running 3 years, and in the end, basically, we're going to stick the big stuff where people will tolerate it, and then we're going to not put it where people won't tolerate it. And so tell me what's changed in 3 years.
Well, all those places are near transportation. That's important.
Well, I mean, that's always been the
that's
argument.
That's the key, Porter and Harvard.
Right. So, you know, Porter Square is going to have kind of an interesting time doing any kind of pushback because they say, well, you've got commuter rail, you've got bus lines, you've got the red line. So why aren't you totally embracing? Really
well,
large,
then they'll bring. Well, Porter is different, I guess, than Alewife. But boy, you go by there and you say.
Well, automobile traffic is something that
that's
cannot
totally,
be ignored.
I know. I know.
And if there's any one single thing
that
I find
going.
Most, well, you need more than one, right?
I know, but that would be helpful.
There's, in my view, Envision Cambridge hasn't addressed transportation issues much
more than
at all.
Right. You know, you I might go to the advisory to see what happens.
Yeah, they, you know, can chat about bikes and pedestrians or whatever, but you know, there are
those
still
cars are on the road.
And,
yep.
Know, and there hasn't been much attention paid to them. So,
well, we have to end this.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, I guess we'll be back.
Yeah. Next week with lots of chock full of stuff.
No elections, but we'll be back with Cambridge Inside Out.
See you then.